Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a wonderful panel of people in a room. When you have this many people in a room, you might as well put on a radio show. We're switching things up a bit on the program starting today. Each day, we'll now start off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. And the way we're thinking of this is an actual roundtable on the roundtable. Because we think the one thing maybe missing from the roundtable was an actual roundtable. So we now are in a new studio, which is more rounded than the other table. I think you would all agree.
No, I don't agree.
It's a half round table.
Yeah, it's a half round table. Well, the other one was a rounded table. So, So joining me for the discussion this morning, Dr. Alan Chartok, of course, WAMC News team members Ray Graff and Ian Pickus, and of course, our Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt. Good morning, all, and thank you very much for taking part.
The maiden voyage.
I know. It's fun to be here in person.
Yes, it's nice to see you.
Usually I just hear you guys or talk to you on the phone, so.
What got you out of the house?
Well, I guess because you asked me to.
Yeah, okay, good.
It was difficult with the time change this morning. It just, that's tough.
You have done so many wonderful things for us, Karen. I mean that. I don't mean to be smarmy, but you are such an important part of what we do here.
Well, it's nice to hear. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
And if things flag, we'll be more smarmy.
That's okay. I can always fall back on that.
Let us talk about the news that is fresh from this morning. It is fresh from the wires. I hold in my hand the Siena Research Institute, Siena College poll that is out today, showing Governor Cuomo's favorability rating still 2-1, positive, but hits lowest level since he's been governor. And I guess the question is this any big deal, Karen?
Well, I think, you know, eventually your poll numbers are going to go down. The governor had tremendous political capital. I mean, he was way up into the 70%, and then he decided to do something which turned out to be a little bit controversial, passing the gun control laws and passing them very quickly in Albany, you know, practically overnight. It seemed it was the second day of the legislative session that he passed the gun control laws. And it seems that he did spend some political capital doing that, as evidenced in this poll. And I think what's interesting that they asked if the governor was being political or doing good for the people. And more people are thinking that he was doing it for maybe politically motivated. And I guess that always makes you a little less popular if you're seen as doing things for yourself instead of, you know, for your constituents.
Alan, isn't that an overall problem with politics, though, that most people consider that people are doing it for political reasons rather than for the good of the state or the people?
Well, you know, I think it depends on the individual, Joe. In the case of Deval Patrick, who we had this wonderful event with yesterday at the Colonial, you know, he says, 2 years and I'm out and I'm never doing politics again afterwards. And people love him because they know his character is that, you know, he doesn't want to do that. I mean, his eye is not on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, whereas most of us think that the Governor Cuomo's eye is definitely to get to be president. I had a conversation with him. I hope it wasn't off the record, but in which he said that what motivates him is what his daughters will think in years to come, and that the gay marriage thing and the gun thing are two things he knows his kids are going to be proud about. So I think, you know, that is in contrast to what a lot of us think about him.
Well, I think that's certainly one motivating factor that he has. But, of course, there's probably other ones as well. I mean, most people believe if you look at everything he's done in the first 2 years and you put it in the frame of what would be good for a Democratic candidate for 2016, then it all falls into place.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I'm certain there's a lot of different motivations that anybody has.
You know, Karen, I think we might remember, you have to have a little historical perspective. I'm a Freudian, as people around here all too well know.
Yeah. And your slip is showing.
And I believe character doesn't change. So if we go back to the time that Carl McCall decided he was going to run for governor, he had all the votes lined up. And at the last minute, Andrew came rushing in to try to run against him. Now, Andrew says that was a big mistake you know, on his part, he'll say that. But whatever motivated him to do it is part of his character. I suspect he wants to be president. He wants to go to the White House. And, you know, he'll do what he has to do to get there.
But I think he really learned from that mistake. And he's also a really pretty amazing political comeback story. I mean, he was considered dead meat politically at that time. And he has come back, and I think he did learn some things. Certainly more cautious now.
That's the difference between character and maturity. In other words, say, I can't do this because I'm going to get hurt if I do this a second time.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Let's talk about one of the things that came out of this poll, which you alluded to at the very beginning, Karen, which happens to do with the gun law. So voters continue to support the new gun law, and by a majority say they don't want to see it repealed. More than 6 in 10 voters support the new gun law, including 3/4 of Democrats, a majority of independents, and more than 2/3 of downstaters. So no surprises there, really.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think what he's getting more blowback on, though, is the fact that it was perceived as being rushed through.
Middle of the night.
Yeah. Yes, and that is what is lingering and that there's been more criticism of. I think probably he thought if he did it quickly, he could put it behind him, but it does seem to be lingering. We've had several Second Amendment rights people come to the Capitol and protest. He's gotten in trouble for the so-called message of necessity, where he it's an emergency measure to get something passed. Literally, once the bills are printed hot off the press, they're rushed to the legislature. A lot of lawmakers didn't read these bills at all. So a lot of that is lingering right now, I think, which might be bringing his numbers down a little bit.
But you know what's interesting about that message of necessity stuff? I've been writing about this and talking about it for years. You know, they do anything, they send it up for a message of necessity, and they, instead of having 3 days for them not to read it, they have no time not to read
yes.
it, if you're following. I love the fact that these gun guys are hardly the people who have been protesting the message of necessity all of these years while governors have been doing this.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think a lot of people don't really understand the workings of government until it's something that affects them that they care about, and then they sort of wake up and say, hey, what is this about?
What would have the outcry have been had we taken 2 months to debate the gun issue? I think we would be in almost the same situation right now with these protests coming down to the Capitol every week and, you know, a certain block of the assembly in the minority unhappy about it. I mean, it makes you wonder, if we did it the old-fashioned way, where would we be today? The same ding on Governor Cuomo's popularity, most likely.
Yeah, that's true. I think the worry that the governor had at the time was that it wouldn't have passed if you let it hang out there for a couple, 3 months, and we got further and further away from Newtown, and people had a chance to think about it.
Well, President Obama said that right on the day of the tragedy, that we have to take action now because we can't let it slip through our fingers and allow us to forget what happened on this day. So there is something to be said about that.
Plus the perception he wanted to be first.
I think that
may be something that's reflected in the poll numbers, that that's political. He wants to be first. He's putting himself, above the issue.
But there's something else to be said here, and it's complicated, and I'm sorry for doing this to all of you, particularly you, Ray.
All right.
But here's what's happening. This governor right now, at this time in history, owns both houses of the legislature. He does. I mean, the assembly or Democrats, they're in front of him in terms of progressive stuff. The Republicans, there are fewer Republicans in the Senate now than there are. And Karen has told us marvelously about all of this over these weeks. There are fewer Republicans than there are Democrats. But there are four so-called, I don't like to use bad words, but it's what you hear from the guys, traitors.
Wait a minute. Hold it.
You mean independent Democrats.
Yeah, the independent Democrats.
They're all so-called.
who sold out for committee chairmanships and other things and got all of that. But Cuomo, of course, and Dean Skelos, the head of the Republicans, the one thing he doesn't want to do is to be in the minority no matter what. So if Cuomo says, hey, you got to bring this vote up, which he wouldn't have done in the old days, and you got to give me 4 of your members to take it. And that's what's happened. So Cuomo right now can have anything he wants.
Yeah, the Republicans are definitely in a tough place. And that's right. That's like an issue for another 20, 30-minute discussion, I think, intricacies of what's going on.
Well, we got time. Go ahead. That's right. It seems like we can, we can deal with that, actually. when you think about, we want to talk about one other issue that is taking place in New York State. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what goes into effect tomorrow in New York City, which is...
ridiculous.
A reduction of sugar in the city of New York. The Big Apple will have a little less sugary bite. We'll talk about that and much more coming up as we continue our roundtable on the roundtable. It's our roundtable on the roundtable this morning. We are discussing about all kinds of issues. Started off by discussing the latest poll from Siena College, and are going to continue in the Empire State by talking about an issue in New York City. On our panel this morning, Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
You may call me Alan.
WAMC. Hello, Alan. WAMC's news team members, Ray Graff. Hello, Ray.
Hello.
Ian Pickus, our news director. Good morning, Ian.
Top of the morning to you.
And our Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt. Hello, Karen.
Hey.
So let us begin. As I mentioned, let's get into this topic about what's happening tomorrow in New York City. Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ban on large sugary drinks takes effect tomorrow, limiting stores and restaurants from selling high-calorie beverages larger than 16 ounces. I hold in front of me a 20-ounce bottle of Diet Pepsi, which does not have sugar in it. However, still will kill me. However, but that is 4 ounces over the limit, from what I'm told. Some New York City businesses are holding off, hoping that a court challenge nixes or at least delays the restriction. The mayor is certainly going on the defense on all of this. He was on Meet the Press yesterday on CBS. He is on Letterman tonight. He is making this issue a major issue for himself as well as for the city of New York. And doesn't that come off? Aren't there bigger things to worry about?
There sure are.
Yeah, size 34 ounces.
Yeah.
I like it, Ian. Yeah. Look, this is a guy you can only love. I can. I love the guy. I think, how do you fault him for doing what's right to save us? We have an epidemic of obesity.
Will this save us? How do you prove that this will save us?
Well,
it will not save us.
Well, I'd just like to finish, if I may. Look. We have obesity. We have examples of obesity all around us. And the truth of the matter is that we have diabetes, and it's gotten to be epidemic. And the experts tell us we have to have less sugar. We don't want it in the schools. We don't want it out there. And he's doing what's right.
Right. So more regulation and intrusion and less common sense and personal responsibility.
Wait a second. What do you mean common? Raymond.
I understand how that goes. Big government. Sure.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Everything because people are dumb.
Well, why do you say they are dumb?
Tell me how you restrict this and make sure that this is actually followed through. Enforce is the word that I'm looking for. So how do you enforce it? So and the mayor says, well, if somebody wants 32 ounces of soda, just buy 2 bottles. Well, that's stupid.
Look, how did the smoking thing? We have fewer people smoking in the country. How did that happen? It started by people saying smoking was bad for you. Then we started to add other pieces to it, enforcement on that. You know, Joe, just because you and Ray, to some degree, are addicted to these.
Well, first of all, I don't drink a sugary beverage, and second of all, whether that law was in place or not, your veiled, not so veiled intimation a few moments ago would be the case regardless.
No, it's not, because what happens is this sets up a goal by the mayor. I saw people on the social media saying, well, he probably has stock in the, you know, he probably has stock in the
aspartame. Oh, I don't believe. I don't believe that. I don't believe
that. He wants what's best for us. And he sets up a goal that this is what we want to meet. And that's how it happened with the smoking. And that's how it's going to happen with the sugar and
but
the rest
of it. But it's
silly. Well, it's hard to remember back to 1990, I think it was, when the Clean Indoor Air Act, so-called, right, took effect. And I think there was a lot of controversy about that.
Sure.
And I remember thinking that they would never ban smoking in bars because everybody smokes in bars. And now it would seem strange to go into a bar and see people smoking. So it does.
Not to me.
Behavior. Not to Ray, but it does change behavior, though. I have to see Joe holding up his diet soda, or whatever brand it is, that's 20 ounces. That doesn't look that big. 16
no,
ounces
well,
sounds like a
Joe,
lot, but
that's, yeah. That's exactly, Ray. Another great point.
But the label
and
will
Ray's
tell you.
Ray's coffee cup, I think, is what, about 60 ounces, that coffee
this,
cup?
Yes. This is my barrel of coffee.
That's your barrel
presumably,
of coffee.
Presumably, Mayor Bloomberg won't be in to measure this for
now,
me.
Well, you
hopefully
don't...
that's not next, because then I would be in trouble
okay,
for coffee.
But let's talk about
us
that.
Too.
So you go into, you walk into Dunkin' Donuts.
Well, that's true. It is the sugary coffees are
and you
affected,
get the,
you're right.
And you get the medium coffee, and they can put the sugar in it for you, light and sweet. But you, if you go one size up, you have to put the sugar in it yourself. That's silly.
Details, details.
What do you mean details, details?
Well, I guess it's to the point is to think about how much sugar am I putting in to my coffee.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times you don't
know when
you're
served
something.
But you're not restricting sugar. You know, I mean, yeah, you can still go to the supermarket and pick up a 5-pound bag of sugar and do granular shots, and that's fine.
Which, by the way, Bloomberg is said to do with salt on his French fries. He's said to be a salt maven.
Uh-huh. Well, he's right about that. You know, one time I went to the doctor, my blood pressure's a little high. He said, cut out the salt. I cut out the salt, took a dive. He's right about that. He knows. Look, he's following the best medical.
No, he's saying he's a salt. Yeah. He uses salt.
He's a salt connoisseur, Mayor Bloomberg,
well,
from what I've read.
Well, I think he'll get to salt, too.
Oh, good.
Right.
Oh, 4 more years.
And
eight,
I
six,
see,
eight,
well,
ten.
That's the question. I mean, I understand your point, but at what point does it end? At what point do you say this isn't working?
You know,
that you have to stop and that you are intruding on people's lives.
Karen's red laser is blinding me, and frankly, we should outlaw the color red in clothing because it confuses people and makes them tense.
You know, we have the brightest audience in the world, Ray. They're not buying this stuff about red dresses and what
intrusion,
that does.
Intrusion of government
and
is no joke.
I see the best argument of all. Ray has his very large coffee cup, and on the outside of that coffee cup are his beautiful, and I mean beautiful, children.
Well,
and this is what it's all about. Mm. We are now moving past our own lives and beginning to set up standards. And you know something? People say, what about the good old days when people were healthy? Well, in the good old days, people died when they were 40 years old. And now they're dying when they're 80 years old. And that's because we've made some progress in all of this.
Well, it hasn't started yet. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens after a few weeks, a couple of years, how people feel about it. Will it change behavior, or will we have black market, you know, giant sodas or something
the
like
coverage,
that?
The coverage, I hope so. The coverage that I have seen has been quite mocking of the mayor. The national coverage that I have seen. CNN did a whole hour and it was just laughing at him.
He doesn't care. He won't care about that. He'll just buy them.
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think
he has some advantages, right?
But getting to your point about what kind of legs this has. Mm-hmm. Real quick before we go to a news break, do you see this moving into the halls of Albany of a whisper of saying, let's make this a state law?
It doesn't seem that way now. I mean, a couple have mentioned it, but it doesn't really seem like there's very strong. There's more motivation to decriminalize marijuana, I think, at this point, than to put restrictions on soda.
Well, there you go.
But it's so interesting to watch who comes up here. You know who comes up here? The Teamsters, the people who drive the soda trucks. Those are the guys that most people don't even think about.
We are going to continue our panel conversation after a short break for NPR News. Alan is here, Ray is here, Ian is here, Karen DeWitt is here. It is a roundtable on the roundtable. We are going to continue our conversation. We're going to talk about such interesting issues as drones. And we're also going to talk about Paul Ryan once again asking for an appeal of Obamacare and much more. All of that coming up next on the roundtable. Welcome back to the roundtable, and we are starting something new today, which is exciting. We're having a roundtable on the roundtable. This is a roundtable discussion, a panel discussion, and we've been having a lot of fun. Karen DeWitt was here, Dr. Alan Chartok, WAMC News team members Ray Graff and Ian Pickus as well. And it's great to have you all here. We've been rolling through topics quite nicely, and I want to continue with some. Just a quick reminder that if you would like to join us online and get involved in this, you certainly can. All you have to do is tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable, and we'd love to hear what's going through your mind as we say what we say. You can also go to the Roundtable page at WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and commenting on the post associated with this discussion or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There is a post there as well, and we would love to hear from you. And if we get enough, we'll have a report from our social media correspondent, Sarah LaDuke.
Nice.
And the producer of this program. Let us talk about something that happened last week, which we haven't had. I think it's an interesting issue because it's really sort of settled in a little bit. There was a filibuster, of course, on the president's nominee to lead the CIA. Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky launched a nationwide conversation with his 13-hour filibuster, which eventually ended apparently because he had to go to the bathroom.
Oh.
As NPR reported,
I believe that was the case. Made it 13 hours.
Yeah. and did you hear on Morning Edition that apparently it was All Things Considered, that the filibusters that have been successful for days, that the reason they worked was because of catheters?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and in fact, there was one emergency situation where one of the senators had to leave because his catheter accidentally had
so this is dislodged. This is the new format, eh? Wow, it's really
I like
well.
It. I
well,
like
I
it.
Think
now
it's...
I know what we're missing on the new roundtable.
But I do want to ask a question, Joe. None of you are really old enough to remember this, but there was a program on very widely popular with a character named Phil E. Buster. Can anybody name that program?
It sounds Howdy like Doody. Fred Allen, but I have no idea.
No, it was Howdy Doody.
Howdy wow. Doody. I think
Ian, Ian our yeah. news director, nice. Wins.
I think it's just osmosis. I may have heard you ask that question
Phil
before.
E. Buster.
Phil E. Buster.
I kind of like the Rand Paul filibuster because it wasn't a threat of a filibuster. If he wants to stand there for 13 hours and make his point, I like that a lot better than, well, Republicans have threatened a filibuster, so they're gone for the week.
I thought it was Phineas T. Buster.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Oh, boy. You know, never argue with a man with an iPad, bro.
Yeah. 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 Phineas, he's looking at it. Mayor Phineas T. Buster.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I like Philly Buster better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you sure. I like it when we can make up stuff, too. That's good. So let us get to you like the idea.
Well, I remember Alan talking to a couple of congressional experts right at the eve of this new term, and they were talking about, you know, will Harry Reid go forward and change the format of the filibuster? Ross Baker was one of them. And he said, you know, it's kind of one of those things where if you do it, you got to live by it for the future. So they get close to the opening of the session. They have that one brief moment where they can change the rules, and they decided not to do it, keeping the filibuster in place. Now Rand Paul gets up and talks for 13 hours to try to stop the nomination of John Brennan. Everyone's saying, well, maybe we should have changed the filibuster rule. I think it's one of those things that you have to allow to be there for each side to use. The Senate is supposed to be slower. And if he wants to make a point as a U.S. senator, he has the right to go up there and filibuster for 13 hours.
And by the way, could you remind everybody what that point was, Ian?
He was worried that in a letter to the attorney general that U.S. citizens could be targeted by drone strikes on U.S. territory without notice. And basically, I think Eric Holder wrote back, that's an extremely unlikely event, but technically
unlikely wasn't good enough.
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, Rand Paul's in that new breed of Republican senators with Ted Cruz out of Texas who aren't happy to hear something like that.
It is something NPR reported on this yesterday on a Weekend Edition, where with the end of the filibuster, the one thing that was left was this discussion of drones and left it on the national stage. So in that case, it really it had nothing to do. It certainly did not have any impact on what was being voted on, which was the head of the CIA, which was voted on, passed, confirmed, done. But that issue very much remains on the table. And I think there's some big question marks for people on both sides.
That's right. And in fact, this has divided political parties, members of political parties. I mean, we send our kids, our children to fight wars and whatever. Barack Obama decides there are some very dangerous people out there and we can fight them by sending, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids over there, or we can take them out with a surgical thing, although there will be obviously collateral damage. But of course, there'll always be collateral damage if you send the troops also. So which one are you better off with? Now, our crowd or the people who listen to NPR basically, I think, aren't always in favor of any of it. And I've heard from those people. But I think when it cuts across all strata on this, that's the rationale for being for it or against it.
Again, this is something that I think has divided a lot of people. To hear Bill Maher on Friday night on his show, Real Time, this is a man, Bill Maher, a comedian who gave the president's campaign $1 million and has been very much very critical of the Republicans, commending Rand Paul for getting on the House floor and bringing up this
Senate
and bringing up this issue of drones. So which the thing that goes through my mind is what were they thinking in the first place? The administration, in the sense that you have to know that this is going to divide people.
Well, look, you're the president of the United States. You're in your second term. You're going to be judged in history by whether or not you were able to hold some of the darker forces, and by that I mean, you know, the Taliban and others, sinister forces, at bay. The next group that comes along will say this president was weak. He didn't do what he had to do. The Bushes did what they had to do. And he's sitting up there trying to think about what's right. And he sees these alternatives, send the troops or send the drones.
And also, I think, you know, President Obama is not always the extreme leftist liberal that he's portrayed to be. I mean, he is, you know, the kind of president who ordered SEAL Team 6 to do an incredibly dangerous mission without notifying Pakistan to kill bin Laden. And I think that is much preferable for the administration than the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, prolonged decade-long wars now that we saw in the last administration. I think he's willing to give a little on the civil rights side of it and on the, you know, can we potentially drone strike a U.S. citizen? Well, if they're in a situation that, you know, could harm millions, I think he's closer to President Bush than maybe a lot of people want to admit on that.
I think you make some very good points.
We would love to, again, hear what is on your mind. All you have to do is tweet us at WAMC Roundtable or go to the Roundtable page, WAMC.org, and comment on the post associated with this discussion or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There is a post there as well. When we come back, we are going to talk about Paul Ryan, who was on Fox News yesterday, once again calling for a repeal of Obamacare. We want to talk about that plus other stuff. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our Roundtable on The Roundtable. It is Monday, the 11th of March, and we're having a lively conversation about many issues, and we'd certainly love for you to become involved as well using social media. I want to talk about a couple of issues as we wind up this segment and we finish up this hour. And the last major topic that I wanted to discuss is Paul Ryan was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace yesterday and got beat up a bit by Chris Wallace for saying that as part of the budget, he wants to repeal Obamacare. And not only that, but really wants to see this, that the budget is basically based on that fact that Obamacare will be repealed. Paul Ryan saying that we're going to propose replacing Obamacare with patient-centered health care, with a better health care system for everybody. We don't want to push more people into a failing program, saying we believe that Obamacare is a program that will not work. We believe Obamacare will actually lead to hospitals and doctors and healthcare providers turning people away. So I ask you, the panel this morning, here is as a political leader, here is a political party that has attempted to repeal this health care law at least 33 times.
That's unbelievable. 33 times.
33 times. Not to mention, went to the Supreme Court.
Yep.
So at what point do you give in?
Not to mention also, we had a presidential election and Paul Ryan was on the ticket in that election.
And made it an issue.
And it seems like we've sort of decided on this.
But the other side, I'm interested, as interested in Fox News and Chris Wallace as I am. Now, let's face it, Fox News tends to follow Murdochism. And the fact that, as you reported, Joe, Wallace gave a hard time to Ryan, seems to me maybe I'm reading the tea leaves incorrectly, but you know, these guys, they don't go off the reservation. So it's possible that maybe, you know, he's got his marching orders too, which is enough already.
Because Chris Wallace said to Paul Ryan, "That's not going to happen."
Yeah.
It's not going to happen when you talk about a repeal. So is that a test? We talk about this a lot, Alan. Is this a test balloon, or, I mean, are we really going to be mired in a protracted budget talks over something that really is not going to happen?
But it also shows the dichotomy, if that's the right word, in the Republican Party now. You know, what happened was the Tea Party was in charge for a long time. Ryan was their darling. Obamacare and birther issues and all the rest of it. And then all of a sudden the worm turned. Now you got Jeb Bush and other people saying, you know, we have to take a different kind of stance on some of these issues. And so you also see the dissonance in the Republican Party as a result of this kind of thing. So maybe when Ryan does that, he's saying, hey, I'm still here, you know, I'm doing it.
And I'm sure he thinks he can still win that argument. I mean, the health care is not popular with a large segment of the country still, and the House Republicans are in charge of the chamber. But you're right, because these governors, Republican governors, are now accepting the fact that the Affordable Care Act was upheld by the Supreme Court and that the Democrats won the last national election, and moving forward with implementing the exchanges in their states and so on. It seems to me that, as you say, the issue is settled on a state level at this point for many states. The House Republicans can still use it as an issue, though.
Even John Boehner has said, look, Obamacare is the law of the land.
They spent a lot of time, the Republicans, doing propaganda 101, saying Obamacare, Obamacare, Obamacare. Nobody knew what it was. They still don't know what it is because nobody understands the exchanges all that well and what's going to happen. So in that kind of condition, propaganda works. You just say it over and over and over again. Ryan has not gotten the memo yet that we've rounded the corner. I think that's it. But also remember, remember that a lot of Republicans lose primaries if they're not. There's always somebody more radical than they are to come along and run against them, the Tea Party types and the rest of it. So therefore, you know, Ryan may not be so stupid politically as he is in terms of ethically for what's good for the country.
And also, don't you think Ryan probably sees the last election as an indictment of Romney and not Ryanism? I mean, he thinks that his view is still a valid one in the Republican Party.
You know, Ian, the guys who run for vice president almost always think that the presidential candidate blew it. And you're right. And also, the guy
who may have a point in this case, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the presidential candidate blew it more than the vice presidential candidate in this particular case. But I do know one thing, and that is Ryan sees himself as a potential presidential candidate the next time out. And this is meant to rally his troops.
He did say that he was telling Chris Wallace yesterday that he has no plans to run for House leadership. Is that a smart move?
He has no plans. It's like when Scott Brown said, I have no plans to run for Senate, but I intend to stay in politics. What he meant was, I'm running for governor. And so when Ryan says, I have no plans to run for House leadership, who wants to be a House leader when you could be president? And at least in his mind.
Plus, I think Cantor is an ally for Ryan. And Cantor is next in line after Boehner, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So he would have to... I mean, I'm sure Ryan could mount a campaign if he wanted to, but he'd have to, you know, turn his back on Eric Cantor.
I still think he wants to be president.
So to Ian's point, then the next move politically is what for him?
To be president, to run for president.
Just to hold it out for the next 2 years and then start the campaign?
Well, he started it now. That's what this is all about. That's why he's out there yelling about Obamacare and all the rest, because he thinks what he can do now is mobilize those Republican voters who vote in primaries and say, I'm the real deal, vote for me.
But aren't we reaching a point, and maybe this is just me, where, you know, one of those moments where you just, your own mind kind of takes over and you feel that everybody believes what you believe. at what point do the American people get really tired of this budget debate going on and on and on? We are sequestered. We are the money isn't flowing. There is such bickering. I mean, at what point do we just say enough already?
Well, you know, Joe, I think that the sequester is a con. I've thought it right from the beginning. You've all heard me say it too many times. I think both sides knew we were deeply in debt. We had to get out of debt. And they were both sides were for the sequester because they knew they weren't going to get their way in terms of philosophy.
Right.
So, but then the question then became who was going to get blamed for the sequester. And I think at this stage of the game, that's the fight that's going on, and it leads you to answer your question, which is, do they get tired of it? Well, you know, if you took the whole United States as a political voting bloc, okay, you might be right, but that's not how this game is played. They play it based on who the voters are at strategic points, like in the primaries. And that's why, you know, guys like Ryan are out there right now.
I get that point where you think, and again, this is naive on my point, but on my part, but you listen to the presidential campaign going on and on and on, and you think, okay, that point between election and inauguration where people say, all right, we're going to have these sides and we're going to work together and we're going to make this better and da 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 da. And then nothing happens. And then we're still at that point. So at what pivot does this happen where the American people, and maybe it's just the midterm election, I don't know, where they say, look, enough. We want you to do something. We don't want you to fight. It seems to me like we saw that in the presidential election.
We did. You're right.
So why not read those tea leaves that seem to be plainly in front of us?
Well, the Republicans didn't read those tea leaves. The Republicans didn't leave those tea leaves.
Pointing to Ray.
I pointed to Ray.
Ray.
Come on, Ray. Open up your yap.
Pride,
you know,
Ray.
We know that Ray has thoughts on all of this.
Are we still on the air?
Yes, we're still on the air.
I thought we ended 20 minutes ago.
No. So.
Oh, you would have been smoking by now. Come on.
Oh, yeah, we're not allowed to talk about
that. No, I'm enjoying the back and forth. Continue. Pray continue.
Yeah, where were we?
Well, my question was, so you had it, so we, the tea leaves.
Oh,
so you read the tea leaves?
Okay, so the Republicans could not read the tea leaves in the presidential election.
We were talking about tea leaves.
Right? They couldn't read them because they lost, and they lost quite badly. Mitt Romney was, we were told, really was in disbelief that he had lost the election. So in other words, if you have a philosophy, if you think it's a popular one, if you put it out there and it doesn't work, right? It doesn't work. Then you continue. Now, in the off elections, we know that in the second term, presidents hardly ever win the House of Representatives because they're losing favor, they're lame duck, they're the rest of it. So if, in fact, what happened in the presidential election happens again, and you raise this very specter, Joe, and Obama's able to continue to get more people on his side, more Democrats elected, the Republicans lose more, that's going to be another kick in their butt. And they might have to come around.
So when you think, well, go ahead, Ray.
No,
you're nodding. Let the record show Ray was sort of nodding off.
His statement has some logical merit. Continue.
Whose statement?
Yours.
Oh,
I do seem a bit surprised, but continue.
I think he was done.
I was done.
Right.
So
are you.
There's also the aspect of this, which is that the sequester coverage and fiscal cliff coverage is never the end of it never lives up to the hysteria leading up to it.
Well,
so
no.
We never say, oh, well, they did avert the fiscal cliff at the last minute. Isn't that wonderful? No, it's on to the next fight.
No, and you just throw it down the road a couple of months, yep. And you say, all right, we take a fiscal cliff, and then it becomes a sequester. And then
I think
it's
exhausting.
And then it's another name.
It really is.
That's because, Ian, you're a brilliant news director. You know what you're talking about, and you know what the word sequester means and the rest of it. The real question is how many people are really deeply involved in it? As Joe posits when he says to us, aren't people getting sick of it? I don't think people are in it. I think a lot of people aren't in it. They don't know. And until it affects their pocketbook, for example, let's just say you can't build another nuclear submarine, which we don't need in Groton. Mm. Well, there are going to be a lot of people who don't get work as a result of that. And will they then turn around and say, okay, we don't like our present congressman. We'll go the other direction, whoever that may be, because I've been interviewing the congressman from those areas for years, and they always say we need another nuclear submarine because they have to. Then what are your choices? Can you really make a difference? No, you just go and elect another guy.
We are out of time, but again, we want you to join us online by tweeting to @WAMCRoundtable, by going to the roundtable page at WAMC.org and commenting on the post associated with this discussion, or commenting at facebook.com/WAMCRadio. There is a post there as well. My thanks to everybody who joined us on our conversation this morning. Of course, our wonderful Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt, who we will hear from later on today, reporting on the very poll that we talked about, plus other issues, I believe. Correct?
Yes.
And also, thanks to Alan and Ray and Ian, and we'll be back tomorrow for another conversation.